Take it all in, kids. This is nature in all its majesty. Welcome to Brickleberry.
Welcome to On the Mic Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, I sat down with Roger Black and Waco O'Gwin of the hit Comedy Central show Brickleberry. Roger and Waco are the creators, writers, and as well as voice artists for the show. The show is also executive produced by none other than the comedian Daniel Tosh, best known, of course, not just for his stand-up, but for Tosh.0. Daniel Tosh also voices the little bear Malloy in the show. I talked with Roger and Waco kind of about how they got the show started, where the ideas came from, where the writing inspiration comes from, as well as doing some of the voice work. Roger and Waco were most recently at San Diego Comic-Con for their second year, and I talked a little bit about, you know, some of the craziness of, you know, seeing the success of the show grow and being able to be part of Comic-Con and having all the fans come out. We also talk about the upcoming Season 3 that starts in just a few weeks here on Comedy Central. You can get caught up on Seasons 1 and 2 on Hulu Plus right now, so you really cannot go wrong there. As for me, things have been incredibly busy. Wrapped up doing a bunch of interviews with the 2014 Vans Warped Tour. Got to talk with a lot of great bands. I didn't do so much of the talking as much as one of our previous guests, Richie T. Sedman, did. I was filming and directing all the video footage for it. It was great to be able to talk with We Are the In Crowd, Echo Smith, Yellow Card, Less Than Jake, just to name a few. All of those videos are up on my YouTube page, so you can kind of check out some of what we had going on. Also, just barely finished up some of the pre-production on High Psychosis, as well as getting ready to put out a few more episodes of The Job Interview. My producing partner, Austin, gets back into town from St. Louis, where he spent a bit of the summer. And we're gonna be cranking out a lot of new stuff over the next few months here, so stay tuned. Austin and I know are taking a few trips down to Los Angeles as well. Well, we hope to see a bunch of you guys down there. I'm going to be hitting up some open mics, testing some new shit out down there. It's going to be a good time. For all of you in Salt Lake City, it has been my absolute pleasure to be doing a little bit of blog writing for Salt Lake Comic Con. So far, we've been able to give out a few Thursday passes for the event. You're not going to want to miss this. There are so many great guests coming this year. Most recently, they announced Stan Lee. I could not be more excited. The last time Stan came to town, I was actually in Los Angeles and missed the entire thing. So I'm thrilled to know that I'm finally going to be able to meet him. He's been one of my heroes for years. I'm still going to have several passes to give away coming up here. So make sure that you do follow us on Twitter at On The Mic Podcast, as well as on Facebook. That's where we give those away. So, you know, if you want your chance to be able to attend at least the Thursday of Salt Lake Comic Con, now's the time to follow us. And I mean, why wouldn't you want to follow us all the time? We've also got a bunch of great giveaways coming up. CDs from Blink-182, Apocalypse Radio. If you're not familiar with them, that's Brandon Steinekert of Rancid. And you know, you're not gonna want to miss some of these giveaways. I hope you guys enjoy this episode with Roger Black and Waco O'Gwin. It was, again, really fun talking with them. I really appreciate them taking the time out of their busy schedules to continue to work on Season 3 of Brickleberry. Again, make sure you check it out on Comedy Central this September, as well as catch up on the first two seasons on Hulu Plus. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, like the page on Facebook. I hope you guys are having a fantastic summer. I know I've been having just a wild summer with all the filming, recording. Oh, it's been great. So enjoy this episode from the creators of Brickleberry, Roger Black and Waco O'Gwin.
Hey.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good, how you doing, man? Hey, can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I can hear you perfect.
All right, so this is good for the podcast? We're on speakerphone.
Yeah, this is perfect for the podcast.
Oh, good. Awesome.
So you guys calling from Los Angeles today?
Yeah, North Hollywood is happening.
Ah, perfect. Very, very familiar with the area. I lived in Burbank for a while and would always drive all throughout North Hollywood.
Yeah, we both live in Burbank.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, where are you located now?
I'm in Salt Lake City now and then hoping to get back out to Burbank within the next year here.
Okay, yeah, we like Burbank a lot. You know, we moved from a smaller town in Georgia, Athens. So it's kind of, you know, Burbank's kind of got that small town feel. Nobody's getting murdered.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the police in Burbank definitely keep it it under wraps. I mean, you can barely go 37 in a 35 without getting a ticket. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's pretty well patrolled.
Yeah, we like it there.
So I'm thrilled to have you guys on. I've absolutely loved Brickleberry. When Rob had mentioned to me that you guys were doing some press with the upcoming third season, I had to jump on it here. So I'm thrilled to have you guys on and learn kind of, you know, what we've got coming up, what we can expect here. Now, I know you guys were just at Comic-Con a couple weeks back. What was that experience like? Was that your guys' first time at Comic-Con?
No, it was our third time doing a panel, and this was definitely the best panel we've ever done. We did a live table read, and then we showed some scenes from season three, and I thought people's heads were going to blow up from this. I think they were Brickleberry fans, and they were expecting it to be kind of crazy or dirty, but I think what we showed them was way more over the top than they expected. But we haven't had a group of people laugh that hard at our stuff in a while, so it really feels good after all the hard work to be able to see the people react to it and hear the laughter. Because, you know, we got our start doing kind of a live show. It's kind of like a taped show that we would show in front of a live audience called The Damn Show. And we'd work for like months on it, and then we'd actually get to see the people's reactions. So it pays off, you know. So I guess Comic-Con's kind of like that for us. We get to, after all the hard work, we get to see people react to it. So that's awesome. And Roger had a great time. He's a nerd, so.
Out in Salt Lake, we've only been doing Comic-Con here now for, this will be the official 1 year mark coming up here in September. And so it's great for those of us that haven't had a chance to go down to San Diego to kind of be able to experience that out here. But yeah, I saw some of your guys' pictures through Twitter and Facebook, and yeah, you guys had an incredible turnout for your panel.
Yeah. It was packed. I think there were people standing up in the back, and they had to actually turn people away. So hopefully they'll just start giving us a bigger room.
Yeah.
We want to get to Hall H.
Yeah.
To get in that 5,000 seater.
So did you guys check out any of the going ons at Hall H, where I guess people sleep out overnight and stuff just to get into some of those panels?
Yeah, we both brought our sleeping bags and we slept out there. Hell no. I think we'd love to go see stuff, but you can't get in. Yeah, people are just crazy down there. Like you said, just like sleeping outside, you know, not bathing. I don't know where they're going to the bathroom, but I don't think I want to know. Yeah, it's like all those people are camped. There are no porta potties, and it's just like, you know, they gotta go. So I don't know where they're going.
They're probably using a Darth Vader thermos, you know.
Just with the, like me. Yeah. Yeah, that's rough. They're all wearing Depends or something, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was a couple of years ago during Chris Hardwick's first panel that he had ever moderated. Was the panel where somebody got stabbed in the face over a seat.
Oh my god. Yeah. Didn't someone get stabbed this year or chopped with a sword over some figure, or at least a fight broke out?
Yeah. I think it was over the Star Wars Death Trooper.
how do they tell if they're cosplaying or if it's a real fight though?
If they're actually bleeding. Yeah, you know, they let people in with weapons, but I guess they check them to make sure they're plastic or something before they start people get murdered. But it's a crazy place, you know. It's a great experience, you know. It's like everybody comes together there, and it's you know, we love going. It was a really good experience this year.
Yeah, because you actually get to hear the reaction. You know, we kind of do the show in a vacuum, like, you know, you write it and produce it and everything here. But, you know, you never get the reaction. You never know what's going on in people's living rooms and everything. So it's good to get that instant gratification, kind of like doing our live shows or like we used to do, or stand-up or something.
Yeah, and, you know, we had a live-action show on MTV2 back in 2005 where we actually went out into the sketch comedy show so we'd get to go out and film, and, you know, all that stuff's fun. And you know, we loved on Brickleberry, but it does get like you just kind of sit on your ass inside your show because you, for 6 months, we're stuck in a writer's room with no windows, and then for the other 6 months, we stuck in an edit, like calling retakes on animation. So it's nice to be able to.
How long does it take you guys to put together just one episode of the show?
Well, for all 13 episodes, it's about a year total. You know, 6 months of writing, six months of post, but every episode is in different stages. So, like, we just got the animation back, you know, in our first couple episodes. But we're also just now sending the animatic, which is like a moving storyboard,
off to the studio for our last episode. So, you know, they're all in different stages. The writing, thankfully, is done for right now. But then if we get picked up again, we'll probably be writing it in October and still working on season three at the same time, kind of working on season three and four together. So that'll probably be a challenge.
So it's, I can't imagine it won't get picked up. I mean, people just seem to absolutely love the show. When I had mentioned a few people while I was at my early morning radio gig that I was going to be talking to you guys today, they were all absolutely ecstatic because they all have loved the show. They were quoting Malloy left and right, and I was just waiting for an HR violation at some point.
Yeah, that's great to hear, man. You know, it's the kind of show that either you love it or you hate it. And a lot of people love it, a lot of people hate it, but that's the kind of show we like to do. Because if you don't have people offended or just hating the show, you're not doing the right thing because you're just playing it too safe.
Yeah.
And we definitely don't want to have any down the middle, like, fans are like, yeah, that show's okay, I'll watch it. No, it's like, we want you to absolutely love the show, and you know, we know there are going to be people who hate it, and we're totally fine with that because those aren't the type of people we want to hang out with anyway.
Yeah.
we don't really care about their opinions because they're probably just too uptight and take life too seriously.
I've made it my goal as a young writer to eventually get a show on TV where I can manage to break the 7 dirty words in one episode and somehow get it on the air. I want to reach that level.
There are creative ways to do that. You know, we've done some of that. We, on season one, can we curse on here?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, we were able to get cunt on the air unbleeped season one, so we're very proud of that. So Malloy, in an episode, he was talking to Ethel, and she said something, and Malloy said, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. And they were like, okay, you can say that. Like, really? She was like, you know, the S&P lady was like, yeah, you know, it's just, you mispronounced it. So there are creative ways to do that. But and the walls are definitely coming down because, you know, not 4 or 5 years ago, you couldn't say shit on cable, and now you can.
Yeah.
But it's definitely moving in that direction where really silly. I mean, these words don't, you know, they're not anything in themselves. They're just words. And if you got a show that comes on at 10:30 p.m. when most kids should be in bed anyway, you kind of should be allowed to say what you want.
Yeah, especially on a network like Comedy Central. I had somebody talking to me about the show that said, you know, I can't believe, you know, some of the things they're able to get away with. You know, how are people not offended left and right? And I'm like, well, you know, their audience, they know what to expect. For one, it's Comedy Central. And it's like, and you look at, you know, some of the voice actors on this, it's like, you know, you're going to be in for a ride, but that's what makes it so great.
We're really amazed that we haven't had some kind of campaign to get us off the air or anything. I guess, you know, it's just what people kind of expect, like, this is what we do, and, you know, let them do what they do. It's not hurting anybody. But yeah, we're a little surprised and a little disappointed that we haven't had anybody, like, mount some kind of big campaign against the show, because we do some insane things. I think the TV Council did something, the Parents TV Council, I think is what they're called. They did something on their website about, you know, don't watch this show. But that's pretty much it, unless there's like a ton of letters that Comedy Central's not telling us about. We haven't really got that much negative feedback about the content.
So I guess that's a positive then. I mean, it's good to be able to, you know, have that offensive humor and kid around. But, you know, yeah, if they're not getting all up in a bunch, I mean, Why rattle the cages that don't need to be rattled?
So, yeah, you know, hopefully people get from our show that nothing is meant to be malicious or really hateful. It's just we're just trying to make people laugh.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of humor that we like. The really offensive stuff is what we do, but we also have enough silliness in the show so you don't take it too seriously, you know. So
yeah, and I can't imagine anybody should, you know, really would take it that serious. I mean, one of the scenes I recall that I had just laughed my ass off at was at the if I recall right, it was at the funeral for Steve, where I just forgot his name.
It was the Bigfoot episode.
Yeah, it was the Bigfoot episode, but where they
Woody, I'm sure it was Woody who said something offensive.
He says something offensive, and then is it Darnell? I cannot. See, now no. I'm getting racist. I can't remember his name. I'm just going with somebody's name that's possibly African American.
Darnell's a good name too. Though. Yeah. Maybe we'd have his cousin come in.
But he walks into the room and a guy picks up his car keys and you can hear him lock his car from inside the building. And I laughed so hard because it was just there, but it was just such a subtle joke.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that was in Miracle Lake, our season two premiere, when, yeah, he was speaking at the old lady's funeral. But, yeah, just little things like that. And that joke might have been added by the director. Yeah, because we let, you know, our directors are very creative people, and if they want to add little jokes, then we're not super anal. We let them try. I mean, some of them don't work, and we cut them out, but the ones that do work, we're like, yeah, that makes the episode better. Let's, you know, let's all work together to make this thing as funny as possible.
Yeah, and there's so many little subtle jokes in there that if you blink, you'll almost miss them. So, and
yeah,
that, and that's what's great.
Yeah, there's always a ton of jokes in our episodes. You know, we just try to fill them up to the brim. So, you know, if one joke doesn't work, you wait 2 seconds, here comes another one. And, you know, we're all the way through color, through post, we're always adding more and more jokes just anywhere we can squeeze one in, you know. So we're still working on the episodes all the way up to until the time that they air, just to make them as funny as possible.
So now how did you guys really come up with the idea to even start Brickleberry?
Well, my father-in-law is a park ranger, and, you know, we had a show on MTV2 back in 2005, so we were really desperate to try to get a new show because we needed to make some money, for one thing, and we didn't really want our careers to be over after one season on MTV2, and we were just pitching all this stuff, and then we remembered something that happened in 2003 because my father was a park ranger, and he kind of takes himself a little seriously, like, and being a park ranger, and Roger, you know, plays Yucko the Clown, so he, like, fucks with everybody. So he would always call him Tree Cop and what, ask him about him. Yeah, you checked any fishing license today? You know, just kind of demean his career as a park ranger, and he couldn't take it anymore. Yeah. So at my wedding reception, Roger had just been messing with him all day, and he snapped, and he grabbed Roger by the thumb and put him in a park ranger hole and bit his thumb all the way back, and Roger dropped to his knees. I think he almost broke his thumb, and then we just always laugh about how pissed off he got just for Roger, you know, he wasn't saying anything that bad, just call him a tree cop. And then, you know, when we're looking for new ideas, we're like, you know, we always laughed about that, so just came up to, like, let's do a show that about park rangers that kind of are crazy and take their jobs too seriously, and, you know, we're also looking for something that hadn't really been done, at least in a long time, you know, and it's hard to find things that haven't been just done over and over and over.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, a completely original show from, you know, things that other people have done. I mean, you can only do so much of just, you know, the dumb dad with the complete nuclear family, and this is something that was fresh that we hadn't seen before.
Yeah, that's the last thing we wanted to try to do is another family animation, because we just felt like, you know, there are just so many, and it's kind of watered down, and it's hard to get a fresh take on that.
So now, as far as, like, the inspiration behind each episode, I mean, there's some of them that are really out there.
how do you guys,
you know, just as yourselves as writers as well as in the writer's room, you know, how do those ideas really start to kind of come together?
Well, season one, we've been working on the show for, like, well over a year. So, you know, season one, Roger and I had almost every idea that season already in our heads or written down going into the season. So that was a little easier just on straight up, what's this episode about? Like, we had Gay Bomb, we had Squabbits, we had all the big ones pretty much fleshed out before we got in there. And there were a couple that came out in the room. But then when we got picked up for season two, we were, like, really worried because we have no backlog. We have nothing. So it just comes from sitting there for 8 weeks and just everybody saying, what if Steve did this? Or what if there's an episode about this? Or thinking back, like, 10 years ago, we had an idea for a sketch that we never were able to pull off and do. In season three, we took that idea for a sketch and turned it into a whole episode. And it turned out great. So, you know, a lot of it is just thinking back on ideas you've had before, and some of it's just a matter of just sitting for hours and hours and pitching, and 90% of everything that comes out is bad, but then you get that one little nugget. It's like, that's awesome. Let's try to break that. Let's try to flesh that out and see if there's something there.
Yeah, and there's a lot of playing off each other. Like I think in the room, one guy pitched out, you know, what if they find a frozen caveman in the park? You know, because the environment, you know, would allow such a thing, like in the frozen glaciers or in the mountains or something. And we're like, no, what if it's a cave woman and Denzel tries to bang it?
Yeah.
So it's a lot of playing off each other. Like, there's really no bad idea. Like, we can usually take something and kind of mold it and bring it to a place where, like, no, that's good, but how about this, you know?
How did the idea with Denzel to have this whole fetish with old women, how did that idea come from? I mean, was that based on somebody you guys knew, or was that just one of those crazy ideas that was out there?
I have no idea. Like, Roger had that idea, like, way back when we did the original pilot, and that's the reason that Ethel is named Ethel, because it's an old lady name, and there was a joke that when Denzel heard there was an Ethel coming, he was excited, but then that joke got cut out, so we really could have named her anything. We didn't use it, but...
It makes it that much funnier to me now, though.
I guess we're just looking for character traits that have been done to death, and we didn't want some just like stereotypical black dude. We wanted him to have some weird thing about him that was like unique and like something you've never really seen before. But I just remember exactly how we came up with that. Like, why did he like old white women? Yeah. I guess I'm trying to find something kind of like what you said is some kind of new thing that's, you know, not really ever been done. You know, he was our fish out of water character, which kind of makes sense. You know, he can't swim, he hates bugs and everything. He shouldn't be in a national park. But I think we wanted to take it one step further, you know, and like what kind of weird vices or you know, flaws can this guy have? I think it was the osteoporosis thing. Was that line sort of what sparked it? I think it's been so long ago. That was like 2009 or 2008. But that was the one we had early, even when, you know, Brickleberry started off, it was going to be live action. That was the original when we first had the idea it was going to be a live action show. And we had that idea even way back then that this guy should like old white women. Yeah, it was going to be like a single camera comedy, kind of like a Reno 911 and National Park kind of thing, you know. But then, you know, we pitched it to Fox, or Fox 21, the company that does Homeland and Sons of Anarchy, and they're like, this would cost $10 million a week to produce, you know? You got people flying off cliffs and cars and bear attacks, so they said, why don't you try it animated? And Wick and I were both, you know, huge fans of The Simpsons, and we actually had an animated segment on our MTV show based on a cartoon that Wick used to do in college, called Inebriated the Koala. So we're always huge fans of animation, but so we jumped on the idea of making it animated because you can get away with so much more, you know, content-wise, and, you know, anything you think of, you can pretty much, if it can be drawn, it can be done. You know, like the gay bomb, like a huge pink mushroom cloud, you know?
Yeah. So now, I mean, even with that, you know, with looking at it as a live action, have you guys ever thought about doing like a crossover episode where, you know, they do go into a live-action version of it, kind of like how Community has done that, where they've gone into Claymation or gone into Muppets.
Yeah, absolutely. We have an idea that we've been trying to get done for a while. The problem is you run into all the red tape with guilds, and, like, if you're going to have live-action, you got to have a guild-based lighting crew and everything, and it just blows your budget out, you know. But one day we're going to figure out how to make it happen. Yeah, because we wanted Ethel to have a real boyfriend, like a live action boyfriend. Yeah. And nobody even says anything weird about it. You don't even acknowledge it. Yeah.
that would be fun. I'd like to see that. So one of the other kind of weird fetishes I was kind of curious about too was the whole Viggo Mortensen thing that Steve has. Where did that one come from?
This show has been going on so long. His original fetish was Chuck Norris, and this was like right when all the crazy Chuck Norris stuff started happening. But then, as it went on, it just got played out. It was like too many people were doing it, talking about it, so like you can't. Because it was like, you're a Texas Ranger, I'm a Park Ranger, I love you type thing. And it's like, we can't do it. It's just too played out. It's too old, you know. So we're like, we got to get some other random. Like Steve would be the type of a guy who would have some weird fetish. Who is the most random person that you just don't even hear about anymore? And that was when kind of Viggo Mortensen came out, and that was when in the Bigfoot episode with Steve turning into Bigfoot when he had all his posters, and then we just decided to just continue it, you know, just keep having him bring it up, and then eventually he got to meet Viggo Mortensen, which was awesome.
Yeah,
in that episode. And then, you know, it continues still in the season 3. There are definitely some mentions of Viggo.
I really loved that because it was completely random. And at first I thought it was just going to be kind of a one-time mention. And then, yeah, as it kept going, and then the episode where they have to rescue them from prison. And they meet him at the Tolkien Con. I mean, that absolutely killed me. That was brilliant.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I think Viggo riding Steve in like a horse was one of my favorite moments of the show.
it definitely
Viggo
was great.
Viggo not knowing anything about Lord of the Rings, you know. He's like saying Fredo or something. Uses the invisibility necklace. You know, it's like just those little kind of jokes. Cause, you know, we both like Lord of the Rings and all kinds of pop culture. We don't do much pop culture, especially not cutaways, just because we don't want to be like Family Guy.
Yeah.
But we like to sprinkle it in, especially things that Family Guy, they're not really talking about Lord of the Rings much and random stuff like that. So
now, one thing that I'm sure you guys get asked about all the time. Is with Daniel Tosh. How did Daniel Tosh kind of get involved with you guys with being part of the show as a producer as well as then voicing Malloy?
Well, originally Daniel wasn't involved when this was a Fox pilot. We did a pilot for Fox. And Malloy back then was actually Scottish. And he had a completely different personality where he was like a little terrorist who hated humans.
Like a sleeper cell.
Yeah. And he was trying to run everybody out of the park. And it just didn't work as well. And then when Fox passed on the show, our agent also represents Daniel, and he was like, well, Daniel's looking for a project. Let's show this to him. And when Daniel saw it, he was really into it, so we kind of teamed up with him and went into Comedy Central to pitch it with Daniel attached, and that definitely helped sell it to Comedy Central. But, you know, they wanted Daniel to do a voice, and they wanted him to play like Steve, and he didn't really want to do that. And then we brought up Malloy, and he didn't want to do that either. But we just had to keep working on him and talking him into it. And it's perfect. It's like the perfect fit because we got to kind of reimagine the character more like his on-stage personality, like really, you know, a little elitist and a little spoiled for a bear and everything like that. So it just works perfectly to have this bear cub who likes to play video games and thinks he's better than everybody else. And we're just so lucky that we got him involved because the character is so much better now with Daniel voicing him. And of course, all of his fans don't hurt. I'm sure that's what keep our ratings being behind Daniel is huge. His audience is, you know, enormous.
I really can't picture anybody else voicing Malloy other than Daniel. Like as the first time I watched the show and knew that it was Daniel Tosh doing the voice, it's just like, yep, it's perfect. It is absolutely perfect because that bear is him.
Yeah, it's so much better. At some point, hopefully, we're going to release that original pilot to let everybody see what it used to be like with the Scottish bear, because it's like, it's really weird to watch now.
Now, one thing that I loved is with you guys also doing some of the voice acting on the show, is with Roger, with you doing the voice of Connie. What gave you the decision to kind of keep more of a masculine voice? I mean, was she always kind of supposed to be, you know, the lesbian park ranger, or was it more or less just supposed to be the comedic styling of keeping it as kind of a masculine voice?
I don't know. I was always a huge fan of Silence of the Lambs. I thought that was like one of the creepiest, you know, voices out there.
Yeah.
And so I brought a little of that in there. And also Fred Norris from the Howard Stern Show. Every time this big female bodybuilder would come in, Nicole Bass, he would do like this deep, Herman Munster kind of thing. So a lot of those things kind of helped develop the voice, you know, just kind of through influence from them.
So, and there's only one other show I can even think of that's even done anything like that with Bob's Burgers. And I mean, I think it adds so much comedy to it to have a guy that's doing a woman's voice and it's not, you know, a feminine voice at all. That when I first heard Connie speak, it just killed, because the first thing that went through my head is, oh, okay, it's similar to the same craft that they were going for with Bob's Burgers, and I love it because nobody else is doing it. And it's just so, it is such a fresh take and just so funny to have that aspect to Connie.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, well, you know, Connie is almost everybody's favorite character because she's sympathetic, everybody beats up on her, but yet her voice fits perfectly. It was like, you know, when Roger was doing that, we knew that was it. We didn't need to look any further than right there.
So now for people that want to kind of get into the animation side of the business, even the voice acting side, what advice would you guys have for people that want to, you know, pursue that as a career?
I think, you know, for young people and everything, just start. There's so many ways to get your comedy and stuff out there. So start a YouTube channel. Just start doing stuff. That's what we did. You know, we didn't wait for anybody to give us a chance or a shot. We spent 10 years just doing our own stuff and building our audience. You know, we were selling out shows in Athens at the Georgia Theater. We're having 1,000 people come out and see us. But, you know, anything's better than sitting idle waiting, you know. But it's not only about being active. It's like you learn so much. Like if we were handed this show back in 1998, it would have sucked because we just didn't have all the training, you know. Like everything we did for that decade, we used everything. Like we learned how to edit. We learned what makes a joke good, what audiences react to, you know, how to shock an audience, how to get that big belly laugh, all from the 10 years we spent doing it. But, you know, today they're just, and that was pretty much the only way we had to get our show out there was like doing live shows, showing our stuff, our own dorm channel. But now you have so many ways to do it, you know, YouTube, everything. So I would just start doing it. And if you're doing something good, people are going to pay attention and your audience is going to grow. And as far as the voiceover thing, that's a little tougher. You know, that's got to be one of the hardest things to break into because there's so many people out here, super talented people doing it, that I'm not even sure how to go about it because we didn't come up in that world of being a voice actor. But I'm not even sure how to go about becoming a voice actor.
Yeah, it's a super competitive field. You know, it's just like any other acting job. It's really hard to come by. There's like Wiggles said, there's so much competition. Like, and even I was replaced before the pilot.
Yeah.
You know, because you know there's so much competition.
Who was replaced and then placed back in?
So how did that kind of work out? Where you guys were the ones creating and writing the show? They moved you out and then moved you back in.
Well, originally we did all the voices.
Oh wow.
Thank God they replaced us for most of them. But yeah, you know, you're kind of at the mercy of the studio, and they're putting a lot of money into it, and they want it to succeed, and they wanted professionals in there, and we're like, okay. And, you know, it kind of makes sense to the rest of them, but the Connie one, we're like, yeah, Roger's still the best.
Yeah.
So they tried another voice actress in there. She was a very talented actress, but she just wasn't nailing it like Roger did. So eventually they kind of saw, like, okay, Rogers is better. So we were able to get him back in there before the pilot was finished. Yeah, when, you know, when you're doing a TV show, you're kind of at the mercy, especially on pilot and season one, you're at the mercy of the executives a little bit. And you just hope that you get good executives that are fans of your comedy and get your stuff. And we're lucky that we did have that. The executives on our show were huge fans of Brickleberry and our soft humor. And they got it. They didn't try to pull us back. They let us do what we did. They let us have an animal orgy, the first scene in the first episode, which is incredible that a group of executives agreed to that. We still can't believe it, but they see now that it was a right call to do that because that's all everybody talks about.
Yeah, and it definitely set the stage for, you know, what the rest of the show is going to be like.
Exactly.
So now, as the show returns September 16th on Comedy Central, what can we expect from the third season coming up?
It's bigger, better, and dirtier than it ever has been. just a few things. In the first episode, Obama comes to Brickleberry. So that's a big, crazy episode. It's all about president. And there's a little, Connie thinks that the president's into her, like she watches too much Scandal. just really delusional and thinks the president wants to bang her. And then a few things that happen in the season, like Woody's mom comes to Brickleberry and Denzel falls in love with her and he ends up marrying Woody's mom, so Denzel becomes Woody's dad for a whole episode. And then he's saying
Steve and Ethel finally hook up, you know, after a drunken night, and Steve ends up pregnant
because of some of Dr. Kuz's handiwork. Dr. Kuzniak does a little hack and slash, and Steve ends up with a baby because Ethel wants to get rid of the baby, but Steve wants to keep it, so it ends up in Steve. It gets interesting. And in one episode, Steve is afraid to fly the helicopter, and Woody is on his ass telling him he better get up there and do his job. So Steve doesn't want to disappoint Woody, so he goes to a hypnotist to become a fearless pilot. But the problem is he goes to a Chinese hypnotist,
and he becomes a fearless pirate. Johnny Depp pronounces it. So, for a whole episode, Steve's a pirate. And then he forms a pirate crew with, like, Bobby and Bodine and Firecracker Jim and Hobo Larry. They all become his pirate crew. So
I cannot wait for this season. You've got me excited. It can't come soon enough at this point.
Yeah, it's a lot of big, crazy episodes. They really, you know, took the leash off this season and let us do pretty much anything we wanted. They you know, everybody kind of got to a point where they trust us, so they let us go crazy, and we think it's our best season because of it.
So, well, excellent. And I know the last two seasons are now up on Hulu.
Yeah.
So, and iTunes, so, I mean, everybody can get caught up there if they haven't watched it yet, and get prepped for season three in a few weeks here, so.
Yeah, please, everybody, Hulu Plus, and all the episodes are up there right now, so if you haven't, go check them out.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much again for taking the time. It's been a pleasure to talk to you guys, get a little bit more knowledge about the show and about your guys' careers.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot for having us on. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, not a problem. And hopefully as I get back out to Burbank, we'll be able to connect out there and learn a little bit more about the show.
Yeah, just let us know. You can come by and see the studio and everything.
Yeah, I definitely will.
All right, man.
All right, well, thank you guys. You guys have a great rest of the day.